This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, what a week it's been. Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer of Galileo Capital, and Raymond Parsons, Head of the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, in studio for the weekly wrap. Warwick, kick us off. That Fed decision, we saw the US Fed divided, five officials wanting to leave rates on hold, the chairman, Jerome Powell, saying that the Fed was prepared to be aggressive. He also lowered the excess reserve rate to 1.8%. But what really struck me was several powerful market commentators in the US flagging their concerns that the US is moving to negative interest rates.
I mean, certainly we would be at risk of going to negative interest rates if deflation really got a hold of the States. I'm not so sure that we're there at all. And I think a lot of the current interest rate action is imported. I mean, certainly with the long end of the European interest rate curve all sitting negatively, I mean, it's no surprise that you would find foreign money plying into the States. So, for example, I mean, we had a change in the status of who's the biggest holder of foreign holder, I should say, of US bonds. Well, it's back to Japan again, taking over from China. Why? Well, because Japan's got negative interest rates. Why would they want to hold their damn bonds when at least they can get a coupon of sorts in another real currency? A currency, by the way, which is considered a safe haven currency.
The yen, that is. No, the dollar.
The dollar.
Yeah. Well, the yen is also a safe haven, but in this instance, certainly the dollar. What I found was a very interesting chart, Raymond. If the Fed goes negative, gold has a potential to explode here because there's a correlation, and a quite good correlation, between the gold spot price and the global aggregate negative yielding debt market cap. And if you put the two over each other, they've tracked each other like a pair of Siamese twins over the last 4 years. So one to keep in the back of your mind for a gold bug. What do you make of the Fed's decision?
I think that's probably a fair comment. I would agree, though, that, you know, if you look back at where there have been fears of deflation, it's usually been when you are faced with a slowing economy, which pulls down prices for certain special reasons. Now, there's so much momentum in the US economy that even if it slows down, I don't think that at the current inflation levels, there's very much risk at the moment of a deflation. I think that's a very distant risk at the moment. If there are things to have to be worried about in the United States, they indeed lie elsewhere.
I think the other thing to bear in mind, Michael, in terms of the gold price versus negative interest rates, I mean, remember that gold has basically a holding costs associated with it. But of course, one of those costs would be financing costs. So, of course, if you go into negative interest rates, holding gold is suddenly a hell of a lot cheaper. And typically your bulk or your big cost as well is the cost of holding the stuff, which when you're talking about a big ETF and so on, they've got it down to around about 0.3, 0.4%. So of course, when interest rates duck below that, the cost of holding gold is suddenly having gold is a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a big part of it. Certainly, if the US did go into negative rates, absolutely, that could push up further interest in holding gold in the States. No question about it. But I think we're agreed. Yeah, it's quite a long way before the States is in negative interest rates.
How does this all come back then, Raymond, to the SARB's decision on Thursday to keep rates on hold? I've seen some mixed reaction from it. What really surprised me was that the decision was unanimous. I thought there might be a bit more of a split.
Well, look, I think one thing we could draw from the United States, which has, of course, because of its setup at the Fed, a more transparent way of looking into their decision making. It's interesting to see that while we may sometimes think that views here on monetary policy must be unanimous, in fact, there is room for difference of opinion, even in the United States, as you, in fact, indicated earlier. But coming back to the South African situation, look, I think when we talk about monetary policy, we know there are times when one has to be a hawk and there are times when you have to be a dove. I can be more hawkish than anyone else when the circumstances are right. The question is, are those the circumstances now? Now, when I listened, and I think others might have listened to the governor, who very carefully outlined how they saw the current economic outlook, I nodded my head and thought, I think we're in for a surprise. We might get a cut, because he listed all the reasons why there should be another cut. And then suddenly, at the last minute, no, we've decided to stay pat. So I think the issue is really, when you relate it to what he said, and also in particular the growth forecast, all right, on the inflation side, it's clear that it's anchored. It already says so. I mean, that was said in the statement. And on the growth side, the situation has deteriorated, because what the MPC did was to confirm that the best we can do this year is probably 0.6%, but more importantly, they reduced their forecast for next year and the year after. Now, I'm saying, if you're not going to at least have a 25 basis points cut now, when are you ever going to have it? And I think that for those who are indeed opponents, which I'm not, of the Reserve Bank, you must be very careful not to get to a stage with your inflation targeting where you say that the operation was a success, but unfortunately, the patient died.
Well, that's the thing with the economy. Moody's, Warwick has said, will get downgraded if growth is low. And frankly, the SARB isn't helping.
Yeah, you know, my biggest concern there is that, and it drives me crazy, you know, when good, smart people do stupid things, much more so than when dumb, evil people do stupid things. But in any case, when I look at that hike that we had Saab do last year, that was completely pointless. And that hike was precipitated on, well, by the way, the oil price and the fuel price has gone higher. Mm. Never mind that the oil price and the fuel price, the oil price had spiked, and was already falling back. So what are Saab actually doing with their forecasts? I mean, are they just dogmatically waiting for things to happen? They consistently put themselves behind the curve, and I think they're doing themselves a terrible disservice here.
I think the problem here is, as we've discussed before, they have their quarterly projection model, which is a very useful tool, but I think the enthusiasm around that has rather led them to be somewhat mechanistic, that if that's what the model says, that's what we do. There is a point, as I've said before, where this cutting edge, you know, modeling leaves off, and what I call the art of central banking takes over. You apply your judgment, say, let me look back at the total situation, and let me see, is there a case here to be a little more flexible than a mechanistic projection of the particular model. And I think I agree. I think all the data that was outlined yesterday, I share. As I said, I was nodding my head thinking, well, if that's what they think, there's only one outcome. They can make a small cut just to send out not so much a real signal, because bear in mind, of course, there was the 25 basis points in July, plus another 25 now, that's 50. I think for the country and the economy at the moment, what is significant is the megaphone effect that it has on confidence. And I think it's not just a question of, quote, money, but also a question of, quote, mood. And that's tremendously important. And I think that's where you apply your judgment. You say, let's get beyond the technicalities. We look as if we've got inflation anchored much better. And that's, in fact, what even their model says. But let's use the space. There is some space. Let's use it to send out a more positive message to business and consumers. And so I think that's my only disagreement, that was an opportunity that I think was missed.
Confidence, the cheapest form of stimulus. Raymond Parsons and Warwick Lucas with your weekly wrap here on Classic Business.